Hello and welcome to Sentimental Garbage, the podcast where we talk about the culture we love that society sometimes makes us feel ashamed of. My name is Karen O'Donoghue, and I'm the hand-drawn calligraphy that no one took the time to fucking notice. Joining me is a bride whose wedding is really more of a festival, Lauren Bravo.
Hello.
Hi!
We just want everyone to feel like they're at a party.
Just chill, no fuss, might wear a jumpsuit.
Yeah,
you know?
Totally. Like, it's just a big love fest. And you know what? If we don't tell people it's a wedding, everything will be cheaper. How many of us have tried that? It doesn't work.
Yes, I've known people who've done the it's an anniversary or it's a silver wedding anniversary thing, and it has worked.
Has it?
Yeah.
Oh, nice. It's nice to know somebody has pulled off the ruse.
Yeah, the ruse.
Yeah, I couldn't do it.
Today we're talking about weddings. I think this is probably in terms of culture that women are obsessed with, that we're constantly made feel bad about being obsessed with, to the point where we go through several layers of gaslighting ourselves, both telling ourselves we care, don't care, care but don't want to look like we care, all this sort of mental jujitsu that we do on ourselves. It is a basket of snakes.
Oh my God, there's so many layers to it. And it is really the ultimate sentimental garbage, because there is nothing more sentimental or more filled with garbage
yes!
in our modern world than a wedding.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, the waste alone. I know you're the sustainable fashion girl.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't mean I still don't have cupboards full of wedding crap. Enormous boards printed with our table plans.
Tiny little glass bottles that had that single sort of pomegranate stick in it or something.
Yeah.
So I wanted to get you in on this because I remember for a while, and we were the two girls who had been with our boyfriends for 1,000 years, but for some reason weren't married or engaged.
Yeah.
And then I remember coming to your house a couple of years ago for a podcast that since got accidentally deleted.
Oh, yeah, that one.
And I remember, and what's funny is you're always someone I see a handful of times a year, and it's always lovely. And you were like, I have something to break to you. I'm getting engaged. I'm really sorry.
Yeah.
Or I've gotten engaged.
And I felt like such a traitor.
Yeah.
Because we were together for 11 years before we got engaged. Mm-hmm. And we were very much that couple that were like, maybe we never will.
Yeah.
Maybe it's not that important to us. You know, we're very happy. Why mess with things?
Mm.
Maybe we'll just be the... And do you know what? Emma Bunton and Jay Jones from Damage, stay with me, they had been together since 1998.
Mm-hmm.
And they weren't married. And I was like, That's great. We'll just be like them. And then they got married. And I'm not saying that's why we did it.
It's like, that's what you're saying.
But the thing is, we were almost the opposite of what you're supposed to say. So we really just wanted the big celebration. We actually wanted the party. We wanted to bring everybody we love together in one room, friends and family. We wanted the big knees up.
Yeah.
You know, the actual legal part, obviously, did take on some importance once we sort of started planning it, but it was never really about that so much.
Really?
Which you're not supposed to admit, are you?
That's so interesting.
Mm.
I think it's this thing that, I was the same as you. For years, I was like, this is not my bag. And I think that was a lot of, part of it was mired in, just being young.
Mm-hmm.
Part of it was genuine, sort of a real belief of this really means nothing, why bother, why mess with a good thing, really expensive, don't have the money, blah blah blah, all that stuff. And then part of it was cool girl syndrome.
Yeah.
It's like, surely I'm too interesting to want to get married. And I get that way with babies sometimes as well. When I think about having a baby, I'm like, surely I'm too interesting to want a child. So silly.
Oh, but no, but it is, because, you know, you're right. Like, we have had chill bride is very much a subcategory of the cool girl.
Yeah.
And it's a real thing, and it's getting bigger and bigger. And the ultimate chill bride is not being one at all, right?
This is it. And it reminds me a lot of Valentine's Day. Because for years, when I was younger, starting as a teenager, I remember being like, crass commercial holiday, kind of bollocks. Made the big greeting card companies, crap. And then, you know, getting more and more years into a relationship and realizing, actually, you know, we don't take that much time to celebrate just romance for romance's sake, and maybe it would be nice to do this.
Well, this is it, because obviously the classic defense of, well, I can show my love anytime, but you don't, do
but
you?
But you don't
come home with a spontaneous bunch of flowers or whatever. So,
precisely,
take the calendar prompt.
Take the calendar prompt. And there was a year where I sort of stood back from the whole thing, and I realized, why have I been actively fighting against my own interests?
Yeah.
Why have I been protesting the idea of receiving flowers?
Right.
And it was the exact same with getting engaged. I was like, why have I been protesting against having a lovely ring?
A lovely ring.
Just for me.
A lovely party. Yeah. Some of the most flattering photos that will ever be taken of you.
Yeah,
they're
yeah.
all nice things to have
yeah.
at the end of the day.
And so I had this, my experience was having this kind of, you know, this, I was with Gav for 6 or 7 years. And, oh, by the way, listen, I'm engaged.
Congratulations. Is this the first yeah. that the Sentimental Garbage listeners are hearing?
I mean, I imagine if people have me on Instagram, they'll have seen it. But oh, yeah. if you don't, then this might be the first. Yeah, me and Gav are engaged.
Da, 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 da.
It's nice because I took a break from the podcast in June and it happened in August. So, you know,
yeah.
and now it's December. It got to this point where I was very too cool girl to want any of these things and very vocal about it as well.
Mm.
And then having to begin this climb down.
Yes.
In around 2019. And I remember it being a real moment for me. And I'd be interested to know what your moment is, apart from just wanting a party, where I was like, Gav came home with me for Christmas or something. And I had this realization of being like, this is, you being here with me has made Christmas feel easier and has made it feel like I've got my little team member with me, and like I can't get pulled into sort of family politics or acting like a spoiled teenager just 'cause I'm home, and like all those kind of things that trigger you when yeah. anyone goes home for Christmas. I was like, I actually feel like myself. I feel like both my feet are on the ground and I've had the best time because you were here, as opposed Aww. To feeling like it was harder because you were here because I have another person to worry about.
Because he's kind of bound into your family to such an extent at this point that
yes.
you don't have to babysit him. He can actually muck in and help.
Exactly.
With the kind of managing the emotions of family life. And yeah,
totally.
I get it.
It's totally that. And I was like, oh, this is what it feels like when someone's not your boyfriend, they're your partner. And I was yeah. like, I do want to make that official. It did feel emotional. And I said to him, I was like, I think I've changed my mind. And Aww. He was like, that's fine. We can do that. And I was like, so should we go and like buy rings? And he was like, no. I want to propose.
Yeah.
And I think I've told you the story before. No, I want to propose. And I was like, oh, okay. And he was like, yeah, it's like one of the few times a straight man gets a chance to be camp.
And oh, I love that rationale for him.
Yeah, because yeah. he is quite camp. He's a very big Essex man who just is also a little tan France. Do you know what I mean? And I was like, that's sweet. That's nice. And then 3 years passed.
I remember. I was on tenterhooks.
I remember this time last year, we did a podcast. We did the High Street podcast. And we went for a ramen afterwards. And you were like, how's it going, man? I was like,
really hanging on in there for you.
Yeah. And then when we kind of finally talked about it. Well, first of all, it was kind of like a COVID, no money.
Of course.
Because that obviously happened, COVID happened after in 2020, which would have been a couple of months after we'd had that conversation. And then it just like got to, and this is the thing I'd never expected in a million years, which was the pressure of it got to him.
Yeah.
The pressure of it got to him so hard that he was like, I have so many plans and I just like, I always just think it's not going to be good enough, and it's not going to like be good enough for us as a relationship of what we built together.
Oh, bless him.
You know, this is a story I'm telling forever.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God, I totally get it.
Well, in the same way that there's pressure on us to be chill brides, there must be pressure on people proposing to be chill proposers, right?
Yes.
Because you don't want to resort to the cliches. You don't want to be Paul Rudd in Friends, you know, on the basketball big screen, whatever.
Yeah.
But you're also, it's like that mad thing where, you know, when you come to write somebody's birthday card and you suddenly forget every in-joke and every kind of thing you've ever known
oh
about
my
that
God.
Person.
And then you just look at the last text you sent them.
Yes,
being like,
you're like, what's our relationship built on? What yeah. do I reference here? So it's like that times 100, because suddenly you're having to sum up your entire vibe as a couple.
Yes.
You're having to prove that you know this person better than anybody else in the world and you know yes. what they would love. And your mind probably goes completely blank. And honestly, I mean, so I had years of thinking, well, maybe I'll just propose to him, you know.
Yeah.
I was like, there's no reason not to. We're kind of both in the same place with this, like.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I sort of, you know, I kind of wanted that moment. I sort of wanted
yeah.
him to do it. And I don't know why. And I don't think it's for kind of patriarchal reasons. I think it was just, I wanted him to come to it. I didn't want to feel like I was kind of always the one sort of pushing our relationship on, like, let's move in together, let's kind of, you know, go on holiday together, let's take the next step. I wanted it to come from him. And I was also just really intrigued as to what he would do.
Yeah.
And how it would go. Yeah.
Like, it's got his end of term project.
Yeah.
Like, what have you learned?
But I tell you what is terrifying, and you had, I think, a longer wait. Well, no, maybe it was about the same amount of time, to be honest.
Yeah.
Every time you're anywhere remotely romantic...
Yeah.
You have that slightly queasy feeling in your stomach of like, maybe it's now. Maybe I remember going on a walk in, I think we were in Glasgow or something, we were walking along the river and it was quite nice. And he was like, oh, let's just go over here for a minute. And I properly panicked because I thought he was going to propose. And that was maybe 4 years before.
I have an exact very same stressful. Moment at his nan's funeral. Where I was at, like, and we were at this beautiful church, and he had been saying something about like how all the men in his family had gotten married at this church, and I was like, cool, chill. And then he was like, after the ceremony, he was like, can I just take you around here for a bit? And into this like lovely secluded like rose bush churchyard or whatever, and I was like, seriously, mate, now I understand the weird backwards logic of trying to cheer up the day because it's been really sad, but like not like this, mate. And then he was like, here's my granddad's grave.
No, I
was
like, gosh.
Oh my fuck,
the relief.
The relief.
Yeah, because you're mentally already in your head, you're thinking, well, I'm gonna have to tell this proposal story to people. I'm gonna have to,
yes,
this will be it forever.
And I this is something because I'm so stupid and insensitive, but I forget that men experience societal pressure. I just assume that their life is the carte blanche to do whatever the fuck they want because all of their choices are ratified by society. But I forget that, like, they have to tell the story forever. It has to be something, it both, you know, references her taste, her humour, her, like, and also makes the sort of whole romance part of, like, Arthurian legend.
Exactly. You know what I mean? Yeah, it's you're building your own personal folklore. Like, every one of these decisions you make. And then, obviously, with the wedding, again, that's kind of, tenfold. Yeah.
So we've started with engagements, and I'm really glad that we've sort of put that out there because I think there's not enough. I think it's so much about feeling chosen, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it is a weird taboo among a lot of women, I think, of like, because I do think the majority of people have to have a conversation with their spouse or their partner or whatever. And I think it's a very taboo thing to talk about because we all want to feel like we were just selected and a hand came down from the gods.
Right.
Like,
I had absolutely no idea.
You. Yeah.
But whereas actually you're pledging to spend your life legally bound to somebody. It's a like people who actually do get engaged completely out of nowhere. I think that's terrifying.
It's like I remember when we switched to fiber optic broadband. It was a conversation.
Right.
Come on.
As it should be.
As it should be. It's a lot to consider. But I want to go back even further and talk about when wedding culture begins in your brain. As a young person.
As a zygote.
Yes. Because it is kind of crazy to think about how much wedding were served from such a small age. And I think, you know, obviously we're both millennial women, so we would have been fed on that diet of like early 90s Disney / the kind of the Disney that would have been coming out in VHS from the past. So Cinderella, Snow White probably would have been on video at home, and then we would have gone to see Little Mermaid in cinema. And all of these things are incredibly bride-centric.
Everything ends with a wedding.
Everything ends with a wedding. And so I think what becomes naturally connected is like these characters are princesses and they live in a fairy tale world, and the only thing that your life will ever have in common with theirs is the fact that they get married.
Of course, and that's why we are still living through the tail end of that today, which is women still wanting to be a princess. You know, you watch Say Yes to the Dress, and 9 times out of 10, those are the words that come out of their mouth, aren't they? It's like occasionally, if you're lucky, you'll get an I want to be a woodland nymph or something for a bit of a change up. But generally, the princess fantasy, it looms large.
Yeah, because it's the only time that you're going to be able to access that Snow White thing. Like, what was your first real brush with wedding culture?
So I was really into musical theatre. So it was every musical that ended in a wedding. Maria von Trapp.
Oh, yes.
You know, which, I mean, and let's not even get into the weirdness of walking down the aisle while a bunch of nuns sing a song about how problematic you are.
You solved that problem,
called
Maria.
Problem. Yeah. And I was the kid that would kind of design my wedding dress. You know, I was very into drawing little kind of fashion drawings from like a really young age. And I can remember the various iterations through the years of what my wedding dress was going to look like. And there was definitely a phase in the late 90s where I wanted to get married in a very stiff satin jacquard kind of gown with a little high-collared bolero jacket over the top.
Yes.
I thought that was like the last word in chicness. And I think that was probably a bit Maria von Trapp. I also had, there was a book which I don't think anyone else will have read it. It was a kid's book. It was called Abigail Again. Presumably there was a first Abigail, I don't remember. But and one of the stories in that, she goes to this wedding and it was completely the opposite. And I think this is where the kind of chill bride seed was planted. And it's this lovely hippie wedding and the reception is in like a cottage by a stream in the countryside. And there's a man with a beard playing a flute and it's all very, and they just kind of pull back the rugs and everybody just dances in this house. There's like a kind of Irish band and it's like, and I remember my mum reading it to me. And I think my mum loved this wedding as much as I did.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember she unearthed this book for me like a year or two ago, probably just before I got married. And I almost remember feeling slightly like I was letting my mum down that I wasn't getting married in a beautiful tumble-down cottage by a river and just pulling a rug back. And, you know, and I actually was splashing some money on paying some professionals to engineer a big wedding for me. But anyway, we'll come on to more of that later, but... Yeah, and then, I mean, it was, as you get older, it's every rom-com, isn't it?
Yeah.
So for you, was it Disney? Was that the big...
Disney was a big thing, but Robin Hood Maid Marian's Wedding, I think, is my Abigail Again.
Right, you sent me the picture of this, and I was like, is that really what she wore? It's like she's got a sheet of A4 paper on her head. It's like...
I know! It is, but it beautiful. Is very that Reformation bride who's like, of course it looks good, you're thin. Maid Marian. But it's very country, I think. It is that pulling back the carpets.
I'm looking at it
in
now.
In the cottage.
Yeah.
I think she was a real chill bride. But the other huge one for me, and I think it was because it was just on Sky One a lot, Father of the Bride.
Yes.
Which I still think is a fucking perfect movie.
Oh, it's brilliant.
It's so good. It's Nancy Meyers, isn't it? It's like an early Nancy Meyers.
I'm sure you're right, probably.
The palette of that is so interesting because it's like a movie that's been made for children's eyes almost, because there's so much like pastel and it's so plush,
very sugared almond.
And Steve Martin is just a very friendly face for kids to love, I think. I certainly loved him. I really gravitated towards him. I don't know why. But so it's like so sugary and yummy, and also that character, his daughter. Have you seen it? Or you remember much?
I don't remember much. I've seen it. I've definitely seen it.
The thing is that like, she's 20.
Yes, because in the 90s, people in films were getting married at like the age they would have been in the 50s, right?
I know.
Cameron Diaz in My Best Friend's Wedding is 20, I think, or 21.
And to be fair, in both films, it's made a point of, it's like, this is too young kind of thing. And, and the whole thing is that like, you know, there's a line where he's like, you know, 2 years ago she was in braces. How can this possibly be happening? And it is this sort of thing of this man saying goodbye to his daughter. But it's also this thing of like, it's the first thing that taught me that weddings are a fucking faff and they're too expensive and they're crazy.
And American weddings particularly, I think at that point there was perhaps a much bigger gulf between American wedding traditions and what people were still realistically doing in Britain, maybe.
Yes.
But that was potentially the point where we were starting to catch up and Brits were kind of moving from, it, you know, our parents' generation, which was very like, we went to the registry office and then your mum made some sandwiches and we all went down the church hall afterwards.
The ultimate chill brides. Those
the ultimate
brides.
Chill brides. Yeah. This is it. Whereas then I feel like the Gen X's were starting to do the, shall we hire a castle?
Yes.
Cut our wedding cake with a big sword and...
Well, this is the interesting thing, I think, because this is what I'm so interested in doing this season. Because obviously, I still want to talk about, like, you know, movies and books and songs and all that kind of stuff. But what I'm kind of more interested in, as the further I get into this podcast, and I've been doing it for kind of a few years now, is not just culture itself, but what culture teaches us about things that we don't consider pop culture. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like we learn all these lessons wholesale from like American movies or whatever. And same thing with like, people always talk about Halloween, right? Of like, years ago, Halloween was kind of nothing. And then we just sort of learned about what Halloween was through American movies. And then we just transplanted those things. Like, what have we transplanted? What have we taught ourselves about weddings through culture that we now see as these unmovable rules that are actually quite new.
This is it, yeah. You know? What is, it's almost kind of, it's crossed over to become tradition, in inverted commas, yeah. But things that, you know, 20 years ago people hadn't even heard of.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's interesting, you know, saying weddings as culture themselves, because I think in recent years they have almost become like following a sport. You know,
yes.
You can have a recreational interest in weddings. And yeah. I watched Say Yes to the Dress, Don't Tell the Bride, the lesser remembered Four Weddings.
I was literally about to say the lesser remembered Four Weddings. That was the best one for me.
Loved it.
It was on Living TV.
Yeah, it was like Four in a Bed. If anyone hasn't seen this, it was kind of a come dine with me Four in a Bed style thing, but with three random strangers turning up at your wedding to rate it and bitch about it on camera.
And the thing is that they're all brides, and whoever gets the best sort of score,
whoever has the best wedding,
has like a free honeymoon or a free something
to reward them for their good taste.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly.
But I was into all that stuff for years before I actually considered getting married myself. Yeah. And I do think you can almost follow it like a sport. It's almost, you know, Instagram hashtags, wedding blogs, you know, weddings can be an art form that you kind of, you're an armchair critic. You don't necessarily need to participate.
The same way with sports, where it's like, if you look at certain sports and you know, I obviously don't follow any sports, but there's always this thing where it's like you look back at like the same athletes in that sport like 100 years ago or 60 years ago, and the standards were just far different, and you're looking at like these weightlifters from the 40s, and like they look kind of like normal guys, and then you look at them now and they're these like incredibly hench like monster men who shouldn't exist, whose hearts should be exploding for the amount of protein that they eat. And the same thing is
that's brides.
Like, he's a hench, swole women eating liver, you know? because it's like an inflation of like the more interest, the more time, the more money until it gets inflated to this thing that it's kind of hard to recognize.
This is true. And it's, I mean, do I have to say it? It's capitalism, isn't it? Like, you know, we're all at the mercy of a massive industry. The wedding industrial complex is a trip. But at the same time, we build our lives around these occasions, you know, and I always say in defense of like hen weekends and things, which is an entire other topic, like, yeah, I can bitch about hen weekends with the best of them, but also some of my like loveliest memories from the last kind of 6 or 7 years have been spending that extended amount of time with my friends or with a load of brilliant women for a weekend, because otherwise you don't do that. And if it wasn't for weddings, we wouldn't see our friends as much, we wouldn't kind of have those milestones, make those memories, take the photos.
And it's interesting because like I think we all go through that, you know, thing of being like, oh god, it's just a stupid amount of money to spend in one day kind of thing, and I will receive no like judgment on that of like what people want to spend on their wedding. I think it's fine. Don't get into debt, obviously,
right? This is it. I mean, it might not be fine for them on a personal level, but yeah, no, I'm with you. And the thing I think I hadn't realised until I started planning my own as well is the real torture of planning a wedding is it's very, very hard to know the things that you will regret spending so much money on. You know, you'll look back and think, okay, that was actually pointless. We didn't need, you know, 5,000 paper cranes or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
But there will also be things that you will regret not spending more money on.
So what was that for you then?
So had I known that the day... So we... This is another kind of facet that's grown up in recent times, is we had a two-parter wedding, which I think has become very much a loophole for people to dip their toe in being the chill bride. I got to cosplay
it's
as
so
the chill bride.
So true. I remember your chill bride photographs. They were stunning.
Thank you very much. So we just 2 days before, we went to Hackney Town Hall with just our parents and siblings. And I wore a little vintage mini dress, a little birdcage veil, all very 60s. And we just went and had a lovely lunch afterwards and walked around the park. And that was lovely.
It's so cosplaying. It's so funny.
And Caroline, I felt so sheepish because I put some pictures from that day on Instagram and people were so lovely about it. And I had people go, oh my God, what a cool bride. Like, absolutely love the whole vibe. And I felt like such a fraud because then I knew that 2 days later we were still having the big shebang and I was going to wear a big white dress. Yeah, I felt really embarrassed about that. But had I known how lovely that day was going to be, the weather that day was spectacular, beautiful autumn sunshine, absolutely gorgeous, lovely sunsets, etc. And it was just lovely. And had I known, we would have booked a photographer for that as well. But because I was being the chill bride, it was very much like, you know, and obviously the photographer is one of the biggest expenses of a wedding. And I was like, we don't need that. It's fine. We just gave, you know, got my younger brother who did a lovely job, mm-hmm. you know, thank you, Dan. He took 300.
Dan, who, aside, currently on the West End stage.
He is. Go and see him in Witness for the Prosecution, everybody. and yeah, I mean, yeah, we knew we could trust him to sort of deliver the goods. But yeah, so I wish I'd booked a professional photographer for that day and actually made a bit more of a deal of it because it was lovely. And, you know, we didn't really end up with that many lovely family photos on the main day, whereas we could have had them then. Other things I would have spent money on, maybe getting my hair and makeup done professionally.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So I did it myself.
Because I'm not planning on doing that. I was going to, like, I don't like it generally when people do my makeup kind of thing.
No, this is the thing. And I think you and I are potentially in quite a lucky position in that because of our jobs, we occasionally have to do photo shoots and whatever. So we at least have a bit of experience and we kind of know that actually sometimes having a stranger come in and do your hair and makeup is a terrible idea because you just end up looking a bit wiggy and strange. And
there's a video on the internet of me that I would pay any amount. I would give all the money back I got from that SponCon for it not to be there.
Right.
I look like a wax candle. I look like a candle of myself. It's so bad.
Oh, Caroline.
And my hair is so curly. It's like that real curly blow dry.
Well, this is it. This is why I decided to do my own, because I have spent years and years and years getting to a point where I feel like I can do my own hair with my eyes closed. I know exactly how I like it. I don't really trust anybody else to do it for me. Mm. They would start the waves at a weird point on my face, or it just wouldn't be right. Yeah.
Or when your hair is too sleek after a blow dry.
Yes.
You know what I mean? It's like it just feels like liquid and you don't like it.
Or for some reason, they style it so that your fringe kind of flicks inwards rather than outwards.
Yeah.
And it kind of looks like some spaniel's ears. And
also, I don't want to have to like do that thing. Or like, I love it on my wedding day as well. I don't want to.
Totally. Yeah. And also, people can't be trusted to give you honest opinions because people will just see the amount of money and effort that's gone into your face and say you look beautiful because we've been socially conditioned to believe, because you've got a face full of professional slap, you must ergo look beautiful.
But I always think of Marnie in Girls.
Yeah.
Her, when she looks like she's been shellacked.
Yes. This is it. So I was so desperate to avoid that I was like, no, I'm just going to do it all myself. I want to be really calm. So my husband and his whole family were staying in a very lovely hotel the night before. Mm. You know, I could have gone and stayed there. I didn't. I chose to stay in our own flat on my own, purely so that I could do my ridiculously convoluted routine so that I knew that I could wake up calmly by myself, do all my hair and makeup. And you know what? I really regret my hair in all the photos. Something went wrong with my fringe. I still haven't quite pinpointed what it is. And I will never know whether that would have been better if I had paid a makeup artist, you know, and a hairstylist. Maybe it would have been worse.
Maybe it would have been worse.
I have to live with that.
Your photos are beautiful.
Well, thank you. But this is the other...
When we were texting about this, you sent me a picture of, like, the errant fringe.
Yeah, I'd, like, highlighted it in green. I'd drawn a circle of shame around it.
Nothing.
Yeah. But I know. I know.
But you know. And that's fair.
And this is the other thing people don't talk about as much as well, is wedding regrets. Because, of course, once the day has happened, you know, protocol dictates that we say it was perfect. And even if things went wrong, even if somebody broke a leg at the reception, even if it pissed it down all day, you say it was just perfect. It was it was perfect for us.
Yes.
It was perfectly imperfect. You're not really allowed to say, actually, were we to have our time again, we would do this and this and this and this differently. You shouldn't have done that. You know, and it's a really complicated emotion because it was perfect. Yeah. Like, we had the best time. It was amazing.
There's something of a soul, like, bummer when someone says that, though.
Oh, completely.
Because it's a bit like when admitting that you wish you hadn't gone on holiday a bit.
Right.
It's like the idea of, like, the money. It's like... You know that gif of the raccoon and the candy floss? It's like the money. Oh, no.
And it's kind of shattering the illusion for everybody else that whatever happens, your wedding will be this kind of perfect. But it was. I mean, that's the thing. It was wonderful. We had the best time.
Didn't everyone get norovirus?
Yeah, some people got norovirus. including me. But hey, it's a funny anecdote. And that's the other thing about being a chill bride is you've got to really embrace the funny anecdotes.
Yeah.
So everything that goes wrong, you've got to just be like, ha ha. You know, this is like Charlotte in Sex and the City with Harry spilling wine down a dress, etc. You're meant to just say, well, we love each other so much that it doesn't matter that we've spent all of our life savings on this caterer.
I love that episode. It's so good. Yeah. When Miranda sets fire to the speech. I'm always upset because I'm like, I wanted to hear the whole
speech. Wanted to hear the whole speech. It sounded beautiful.
And why is Miranda giving it? I don't think they're that close.
No, but I think it's lovely that she gave Miranda that chance to be vulnerable.
I know, and we never got it.
No.
Give it to me. This might be a good opportunity just to go through the cultural weddings that stick in our head. Mm. Obviously, we've said the Disney things already. But something that is just stuck in there, and I thought about it again when you said that you did your hair and makeup alone, is Monica's wedding in Friends.
Right.
She does her own makeup.
She does her own makeup, and she's got her hair in like a big octopus bun. She doesn't seem to be about to wash it. I'm like, you're going to have a kink in that.
There's nothing that like tells you more that the writing room was men on Friends and the way they handle weddings in general.
Very strange.
Very strange. And I just remember thinking, like, it was so weird that she was doing her makeup at her kitchen table.
I know.
And there was a big plastic bag of makeup and she just, hair in a top knot. And I was like...
And Monica.
Monica!
You know, Phoebe, fine.
Such a betrayal of that character.
Completely. It was like they had absolutely forgotten everything they had spent, like, 7 seasons or whatever building up.
Yeah.
Phoebe's wedding in Friends, however, very much the chill bride canon, quite literally, because as we know, she was freezing.
She was freezing in the snow.
But that, you know, and I do think that as much as we can hold culture responsible for building up these, you know, ridiculously overblown, hyperbolic kind of ideas of what a wedding should be, there is a proper kind of strong thread of chill brides going through films and TV that do make it seem so romantic when everything goes wrong.
The to stay on Friends, the London wedding, Emily's wedding, when they the chapel that they was kind of half destroyed, and then they put up the fairy lights. That episode sold so many fucking fairy lights.
Fairy lights, and to this day there is still that fallacy, and I think I'm sure people said it to us as well. This kind of well, can't you just find like
a
disused barn or a warehouse and just, you know, get everyone to muck in and just fill it with fairy lights. No, you fucking can't, because it doesn't exist anymore, because anybody in 2022 who has a barn, they have monetized it up to the hilt. They have brochures. They know what they're doing. I mean, the place we got married is, it's a disused tram shed in Hackney down a cobbled alleyway next to a gym. And it was still, you know, absolutely top of our budget, like eye-wateringly kind of, can we even afford this?
Go on, tell me how much.
They know what they're doing.
I'll bleep it out. I'll bleep it out how much budget.
I actually can't remember exactly.
So I had this conversation with my friend Kate Young, who's been on the podcast before, and who for many years had a sideline in wedding caterers. And I was sort of between looking at two venues, and one of them was the sort of the disused shed vibe, but it was more like a compound kind of thing. It was more like there's a big hall and then there's cottages around it, but you basically have to organize everything yourself.
Right, lovely.
And like, here's a list of suppliers that are local. And the other one was like, we're a wedding factory.
Yes.
We make weddings. We
one
eat
wedding,
brides,
please.
We shit weddings. One wedding, please. Exactly. And I went to Kate Young about it and I was like, you know, doing all the thing. And she was just like, I'm going to tell you now, the difference between a happy bride and a devastated one is two words, and that's dry hire.
Oh, it's so true.
A dry hire is basically a place where you have to do everything yourself. You do the fairy lights, you do the food, you hire the caterer separately. And she's like, it always goes the same way. Which is that everybody sort of has to muck in all the friends and family.
And that's romantic in itself, right? We have these lovely ideas about how lovely, and, you know, pulling in favours from friends and family makes the day so much more special. And it can, but you're going to cross a line where it just becomes a piss take.
Right. And she said, like, there's so many weddings that she's catered where the friends and family had been up the night before folding fucking origami swans, or, like, putting up the fairy lights, or doing this or whatever, or, like, the caterers have had a sort of a breakdown, and then we have to go and pick them up, and somebody has to find them and then refrigerate the meat because the fridge is all that kind of shite. And she's like, everyone the next morning is knackered and resentful.
Yeah.
And that's what it actually does, is that everybody feels like you owe them a favour. And do you want to go there to that with your
I think the trick to that is, it's like using people's natural skill sets.
Yeah.
So I had, you know, two of my best friends sang, played the piano at our wedding. Gorgeous. Like,
yes, yes.
Think when people have talents like that, that they are you know, and you're confident that they're comfortable and happy and would love to be involved. I think that is one thing. Asking people to do stuff that they're not in any way qualified for.
Yes.
And have never expressed an interest in doing. That's when it crosses that line, I reckon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would also say, I've noticed that the sober people in my life, the people who are in addiction counselling or just are sober, they love being given a job.
Oh, that is true, because you don't have a glass in your hand.
You don't have a glass in your hand. So you may as well have a clipboard thing that you're responsible for.
Yeah.
You can sort of like duck in and out when people are getting a bit much for you. So that's the only thing I've really learned so far.
I mean, I don't know if this is the time to say I have also officiated a wedding.
Okay.
Yeah.
How did you find that?
I mean, it was probably one of the best moments of my life. It
really?
Was the biggest adrenaline rush. It was wonderful. It was my best friend. It was absolutely fantastic. But there's the ridiculous situation that I've never been in, but I've had friends in it, where you get invited to the wedding, not the reception, and then you are invited to the evening part, which is fine.
So basically not the meal.
So not the meal to
That's
save
weird.
Money. Yeah, like fine if it's local, but I've known people who've had to travel halfway up the country to then just go and sit in like a harvester or something on a roundabout for like 5 hours waiting until they're allowed back into the wedding. Yeah.
Wow. So this is something that particularly my single female friends tell me a lot, which is that they feel like they get the sort of rent-a-crowd treatment, where they are invited to weddings where they don't really feel like they should be there, and they've kind of been invited a little bit last minute. I think you actually cover this in your book, of like you're on the reserves list.
Yeah.
And it's so, because I think it's such this thing where like single women who are treated so poorly by all of society so much of the time, they're like, their social value is just grabbed at in a way they find so overwhelming. It's like a dog jumping up on them when they go into a house.
That's it. We need to bring the fun. We need to
bring the fun.
Fun single ladies.
Yeah, she'll get drunk. She'll bring fags. She might snog someone.
Right.
And she'll also talk to my Uncle David.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
I think the phrase I use in my book is a matrimonial Tetris piece.
Yes, so exactly. Yes.
Just kind of slotting people in. But then it's so hard, isn't it? Because I think on that side of things, I can completely imagine that feels terrible. But then when you're planning the wedding and you're trying so hard to balance the money, the guest list, the table plan, the who can we fit in, and you then realize that there's just there's no perfect solution to any of this, because you can't afford to give everybody a plus one.
That's it.
You know, and you also don't want to look around a room full of people and see a load of faces of people you've never met.
Right.
And I don't think we did this. I think we I'm trying to think now. I'm so sorry to any single friends listening if we did do this. I think we kind of said to people, like, if they had a mutual friend that we knew a bit, please bring them along for the evening, so you've got someone
lovely.
To kind of dance with and have fun with. And I don't think there was anybody.
But here's the thing. I'm like Dolly said to me a few times, she was like, I just don't believe plus ones are a thing. I think that's what, and that,
strong stance.
I totally get, there's so many ethical stands that people try and make in so many things in life, like child raising or weddings or whatever, where it's like, no, I simply do not see the point of this and I shan't be doing it. Mm-hmm. And then when the rubber really hits the road, then we see that kind of start to fold in on itself, which is, I don't believe plus ones are a thing. That's not a thing. You know, no one gets one unless we're really good friends with the person's partner. But then you're like, well, okay, but I'm inviting this person who, for example, maybe is a friend from a job 3 jobs ago.
Right.
And I love them and I see them every couple of months kind of thing, or even less than that. They're not going to really know anybody.
Yeah.
You know?
That's not a fun time for them.
That's not a fun time for them. Whereas somebody else who, let's say I see them a lot, they're going to know loads of people. We work in the same industry, whatever. I've met their boyfriend a bit, but I don't know. Like, does that guy get it? Like, which guy gets in?
Yeah. And how much will you really care when you look back at your wedding photos in 20 years and there's a random bloke?
Yeah. But that random bloke cost me £200.
Yes. And
do you
know
what?
I've been the random bloke.
Yeah.
The first wedding that Matt and I ever went to, we'd only been together for like less than a year. I'd never even met the couple until the wedding day. And we sat at the back thinking, like, we're quite peripheral. I think we were even on the reserve list anyway for the wedding. And then the ushers were like, oh, guys, we've got some empty spaces at the front. We really need to fill it up. Can you? And I ended up sitting in like the second row at this wedding.
No.
My face is in the background
Why
of all
was
of their
no
ceremony pictures. Don't know. They'd never met me. I mean, thankfully, you know, we are still together. It's not like I was just
no
random
right.
cameo, but I so easily could have been some woman they never heard of again. And yeah, wow. my face will be forever in the midst of their lovely, like, you know, exchanging ring photos. It's just me. Yeah. But my parents didn't have any dancing at their reception. I remember asking them what their first dance was, because obviously that's a huge thing,
oh,
you know,
right.
like
yeah.
when you're going out with somebody.
But it's this other thing where culture and your wedding start to blur together. It's like, what, that song has to say something.
Well, this is it. And also your wedding is a kind of, whether you like it or not, it's an opportunity for you to show the world what great taste you have in everything, right?
And also like names of tables. Oh, it's our favourite Scorsese film.
Yeah.
Whatever. You're at Mr. Pink or something, you know, that's like...
And trying to balance that kind of, you know, the weird adolescent urge to be very like cool. And actually, we're only playing obscure Canadian indie bands at our reception. But then at the same time, you know that what people really want is Mr. Brightside, and you can't fight it. My best friend
I shan't be.
She was adamant she wasn't having Mr. Brightside at her wedding. She was like, absolutely not, over my dead body.
Yeah.
Did she? Of course she bloody did. 10 o'clock. DJ puts
Mr. Brightside needs to have an episode of its own on this fucking podcast.
I think it does, you know.
It's become the British national anthem.
Yeah. We're all coming out of our cage and we're doing just fine. Yeah. I went and found her on the dance floor and laughed in her face. And she was like, I know. You can't fight
it. You can't fight it. You can try City Hall or Mr. Brightside.
You could literally, you know, you could scrub that track from the face of the earth and it would still play at your wedding. Don't fight it, people.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
But it's like, it's all these little cultural choices that you have to make. So it's like, you have to have something to walk down the aisle to or whatever, a piece of music. And then you have to have your first dance.
Yeah.
Right. You have to have your customized sort of pop culture wedding table thing.
Yeah.
And then often the speeches littered with quotes as well.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. I mean, the friends that I married, we literally worked a... Bridget Jones and a Moulin Rouge quote into the ceremony.
Really?
Yep.
How'd that go?
Really well. Though it raised a smile among those who recognised it. To those who didn't, it just sounded like some slush. It's fine.
So, dresses.
Yeah.
I mean, horrible.
You're in the thick of it at the moment, right? Yeah, Have you got your dress? Have you tried some on?
I have a dress. I have a dress.
But is it the one?
I don't know.
Oh! Caroline, the thing is, it breaks my heart to tell you this. You will never know.
I will never know.
That, you know, ultimately, it's like choosing a life partner, right? You just have to pick one because there are infinite options out there. But life is short.
I know that I love it.
Okay.
I know that I feel great in it. But... I'm like, has it got this like the extra special X factor thing that elevates me to a celebrity?
Yeah.
But also I had this experience where I went to dress shopping with my mum at a boutique in Cork and tried on a lot of beautiful dresses and, you know, all of which were like a couple of grand minimum, which is more than I want to spend ever on a dress. And it actually made me quite depressed. it was fine. And the guy was really nice. And like, you know, it was a lovely experience. It was the thing that the say yes to the dress experience.
Yeah.
But it was like realizing all these beautiful dresses that cost thousands of pounds, how tight they are.
Mm-hmm.
How white they are, which
so
is
white.
Like the idea of being on my wedding day and not being able to eat, dance, or hug
or
people
spill.
Or spill And I that's not what I'm doing it for. I don't want to do that.
I mean, that's one of the big questions that I guess previous generations never really had to think about. Actually, no, that's not true, because my granny got married in pink. But these days it's, are you going to wear white? And if so, do you feel a bit bad for sort of conforming?
Yeah.
You know? And it's like, no one's saying you have to wear white anymore. And yet the vast majority of us still do. I don't think I even look good in white. Doesn't suit me. Washes me out.
I don't look good in white. You had a lovely like gold thing.
There was
motif
some,
going.
Some gold and silver flowers and really, stars going
it
on.
It was really, really nice.
Thank you.
But it for me, it's not even about a statement of like virginal purity or whatever.
What?
Excuse me?
I'm sorry?
An Irish Catholic girl. But it's more about spilling. I am a spiller. I'm one of life's spillers. you know?
To quote Phoebe Buffay, Phoebe Buffay again, I need to live in a land where people can spill.
I know. I do need to. Yeah. And like, and, yeah, I can't.
Fair.
And that's just knowing yourself, you know? I think that's fine.
Yeah. And also, I mean, back to pop culture for a second. Richard Curtis, who has an awful lot to answer for in this sphere in general, but About Time, have you seen About Time?
Yeah, I like it
a lot. She walks down the aisle in the red dress.
Yes.
And then it pisses it down. The marquee collapses.
Yeah.
They all end up soaking wet, crammed into the parents' front room doing the speeches. And again, romanticising weddings where everything goes wrong, everything is unconventional. Yeah. You don't have to do any of that stuff. But if you look like Rachel McAdams, it helps, you know? And you kind of think, God, in real life, though, if all that happened and went wrong, would you feel like it was perfect and the most romantic day of your life? Or would you be thinking, actually, fuck it, I wish we had sprung for summer with a roof?
Well, what's that? What's that David Nichols quote from the beginning of One Day, where I think that the opening chapter is about, like, how the first flush of, like, weddings in, you know, one's early 20s and people are just graduating, or obviously he's a different generation above us or whatever, so people were getting a bit married a bit younger, and it being this like lovely sort of like scrappy cobbled together bake our own wedding cake kind of thing, and then how it advances as you get older. It is like that Sex and the City quote, actually, of your age and your money and the dress and the expense of the dress, it ups the ante at every level, from the Sex and City movie. Remember when she's like,
of course.
Well, he's like, what happened to our little registry office thing with you in the suit and all that? And he's like, well, the dress, the Vivian Westwood dress, it's up to the ante.
And it's funny, I remember when I was looking for my wedding dress, a couple of friends did say to me, well, why don't you just do what Carrie was going to do and get the vintage suit? And
it's bride funny wore that, no one.
Yes. People wanted me to do that, but did they do it themselves?
No. I remember, actually, I was with Dolly yesterday, and I was like, I could see him like ending up with a real short king. She was like, you marry a short king.
Yes. It's like when someone says they're going to get a pixie cut.
Yes.
And you're like, yes, you do it so that I don't have to.
Yeah, so I can see how it looks. Yeah, exactly. So a few years ago, I heard a parable about weddings from a woman that I know who is married and who's quite famous. Mm-hmm. And she had this really lovely wedding when she was really young, in her early 20s. And it was all DIY, made her own wedding favors that were like little, you know, tape decks, made her own wedding cake, secondhand dress. Beautiful, beautiful. And then and she loved it. And then a few years later, her best friend from home got married. And it was a huge circus wedding, enormous dress, 5 bridesmaids, all of that. And this friend, this quite famous friend, she was like, what are you doing all this for? Like, what is this? You don't need this. You don't need this circus. Like, why are we all wearing the same color dresses or whatever? And then the friend turned around to her and said, listen, people look at you all the time.
Yes. Yes.
And I find that, like, really... really, really interesting, because like even in the small sort of media space that you and I work in, where like sometimes you get your picture taken.
Yeah, you get to go to an awards ceremony, as you did a few weeks ago, wearing a spectacular
Thank
dress.
Thank you. It was a
honor. Might I add? I mean, if you just got married in that, frankly.
Yeah, I wouldn't. Yeah. I'd be open to it. It was gorgeous.
We get the opportunity every so often to be a fancy lady.
And not even being fancy, but being listened to. Like, even if it's like being invited on some shitty panel where there are 17 people in the audience and the social media manager sort of like live tweeting it or whatever. It's still, people are looking at you, people are listening to you, people have acknowledged that you have things to say.
Yeah. It's more than most women still get in this world.
Yeah. It's true.
And have you ever heard Deborah Frances White of The Guilty Feminist do her kind of speech that she has about why actually sort of we should reclaim bridezilla-dom?
Yeah.
And she believes that it's sort of in a weird way a feminist thing for women to have this one day where everything is all about them.
Yes.
And they want to take up the most space possible in an enormous dress and have everybody look at them and
yeah.
have everybody cater to their whim, no matter how ridiculous that might seem. And yeah, I mean, she explains it far better than
no,
me.
I do get it. It's yeah. like, I think there's been so many like, you know, feminist run-throughs of the wedding industrial complex, like from the kind of like, you know, very 70s feminist thing of like, oh, your dad giving you away, what kind of fucking shit is that kind of thing? Your dad selling you to some other man, fuck that. And I think we've kind of moved past that now of just thinking like, well, it's just nice to include dad, isn't it?
Yeah.
and so it's like every few years weddings have a new feminist wash
totally.
Or something on them, and I'm in favor of this one of like, yeah, it's like, because like we all know, like, there's literally stats to back this up that, like, marriage on the whole benefits men more than it does women.
Yes, they live longer.
Yes.
They genuinely live longer.
Married
if they
men
are married.
Live longer. Single women live longer.
Totally.
Like, we all know that society's built this way. Women absorb most of the fucking childcare labor,
yeah.
most of all the kinds of labor. It's horrible. I wish to change it. I hope my marriage will be different. I still know that I'm going to be the person that my kids. School calls when they fucking vomit everywhere. Do you
yeah,
know what I mean?
That's not changing anytime
that's
soon.
That's not changing. And so
try as we might, yeah.
It's a bit like Indiana Jones just grabbing his hat as the door closes. This kind of thing is like, give her this.
Yeah.
It's going to be so fucking hard for her.
And I think you're completely right. And when I try and examine my reasons for deciding ultimately that yes, we did want to get married, part of it probably was because we also knew we wanted to have kids. And I think we were like, well, and you know, plenty of people have kids and then maybe have a lovely wedding later on with their kids yeah. there, and that's gorgeous as well. But I think there was a part of us that was just like, well, let's just have one last really selfish,
yeah.
frivolous, massive party
yeah.
before that door closes. And, you know, we then become kind of people who have to be responsible for other people for the rest of forever.
Like, if we really think about what marriage is, it's like agreeing to like, if your dad gets dementia, I will move to your hometown.
Right.
Like, you know what I mean?
I once told a friend, and I'm really sorry if my parents are listening to this, but I do think it's quite beautiful in its own way. I once told a friend that I would never marry anyone unless I was absolutely sure that if they needed to, they would wipe my parents' arses. Because I think that is marriage. That is a long-term
yeah.
commitment to somebody, is knowing that you will, like you were saying earlier with Gav, like you will be a part of their family.
Yeah.
You will step up and do whatever that means.
Yeah.
No matter how hard things get.
And that is sentimental. And it's worth putting your money where your mouth is in a way. Like, I'm not saying everyone should spend fucking 20 grand on their wedding or whatever, like, crazy number. But I think there's something in that.
Yeah, I totally get why we still have that urge in this day and age to
yeah.
do that. Even though no one's demanding it of us, it's not necessarily yeah. obligatory. But it still feels really special to kind of say, actually, no, we want to commemorate everything we've achieved so far in being this couple
yeah.
and everything we are planning to do in the future.
Yeah.
And let's, you know, be able to look back on some photos of us looking really hot when we decided it, because now we probably don't.
Now we probably don't.
Because life
got
a bit real. Yeah.
Yeah, and that we get this like one little day of fantasy before, as you say, yeah, life gets really real.
Yeah. Or even, you know, I think for people who have had a lot of real life before that moment, to get
yeah.
to step out of it for a day and say, well, you know, let's just be Hollywood stars for a day to each other.
I love weddings.
I absolutely love weddings. This is the thing, you know, I can, yeah, like I can bitch about a lot of the details,
yeah.
but I've been to, so Matt and I have been to 29 weddings, I think, together, including
yeah.
our own. And I've had a brilliant time at every single one of them.
Yeah.
I love them. Some of my very happiest memories have been forged through weddings.
Because like the thing is, if you're interested in human behavior,
yeah,
you're interested in weddings.
Oh yeah.
Because like it just puts people in this particularly the speeches is always my favourite part of a wedding.
Really? It yes. Really,
because it's like people who aren't used to public speaking who have been forced to come up with something.
That's it. And some of the best speeches are not the funniest, the most articulate, the slickest. They're the ones where somebody who is not used to holding a microphone...
Tears me apart.
Just speaks from the heart.
Yeah.
You know, or even just tells some slightly stale jokes or whatever that they maybe got off the internet. Yeah. But the fact that they're standing up, they're doing it, I think is so moving.
Do you know what always makes me cry?
What?
When a mum speaks.
Yeah.
Especially if the dad's like dead.
Oh, don't!
Sorry.
Stop it.
It's too much.
And actually just the joy of getting to see your friends in that wider context. You know, I love, even if it's weddings of people like maybe sort of my husband's friends, people I don't know as well, getting to see them surrounded by their family, getting to hear stories from their childhood.
Yeah.
You suddenly have a much richer understanding of who that person is and where they've come from and why they are who they are. And I think that's lovely.
And my sort of like biggest, I think every person's real biggest fear about a wedding is like looking in a room and seeing all these weird component parts of your life and see and like looking over and seeing like the weird uncle with the friend from three jobs ago and being like, what the fuck are they talking
what
about?
What are they talking about? And you can't know.
You can't know.
And you can't be everywhere in that room, so you're just going to have to deal with it.
Right, because I never have birthday parties because I do feel very vibe control-y. I feel like I need to know that everyone's having a good time. And I end up sort of like flitting over to people and being like, you know, that Bridget Jones thing. It's like, it loves horse riding and blah, 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 blah. Isn't terrible about Chechnya? Like,
it's one of the hardest things I think about having your own wedding is that, you can't control ultimately how much fun people are having and when and where and how.
Yeah.
So like I definitely had a couple of moments at ours where a song would play that I had specifically put on the playlist, imagining all my closest friends dancing with me to this one song. And then that song came on and they were all outside getting a toasted sandwich. And, you know, and you really had to stop. I had to stop myself doing a bit of a like, where is everybody?
It's my day.
Yes. But then you have these other magical moments that you can't even predict. So like, for us, we decided to have a sing-along with a guy with a piano come and do like a kind of good old knees up around the piano kind of thing.
Was it like after the band?
We didn't actually have a band. Oh, we just did our own playlist. We didn't have a DJ. Caroline, I don't know if I mentioned this, but I'm a chill bride.
Do you regret not having a band?
No, I actually don't at all.
Really?
No, I have to say. And that was something that people really tried to put us off. We had people going, no, you need a professional. You need a professional to pick up on the vibes of the room and to mix one track into the next track. And no, we just had a Spotify premium. We spent like months, you know, carefully curating and the entire day. So we had a playlist for before the ceremony, after the ceremony, for the meal, for the dancing. But then we did have this guy with a piano who came and did a sing-along.
Oh, that's good.
And it was at the sweet spot of the evening where everyone had had like just enough to drink to get really into it. And we did, I think it was about 8 different songs. We had some proper like sing-along classics. We started off with Sweet Caroline because the Euros had been on and everyone was kind of into that. We had Don't Look Back in Anger. We had Life on Mars. But the absolute best moment, I think, of the entire day was we had Never Ever by All Saints.
Oh.
Because for our generation, getting to do the spoken word intro bit, just magic. But the best thing was looking up and seeing my parents and my husband's parents and my auntie and uncle with their word sheets very earnestly chanting, you know, a few questions that I need to know.
Oh, my God,
how
that's
you
so
can
sweet.
Ever have, and it was just magic. And I could never have predicted that that would be probably the best moment of my wedding. But it was just wonderful. This like euphoric wave of kind of like communal, fun and emotion.
Oh, we've been talking for absolutely ages.
We really have. And I could go on for hours.
I know, there's so much more. Thank you for coming on this podcast.
Oh, thank you as always.
You're always
me.
One of my favourite guests ever, anytime, any place. And you have a book coming out in April, don't you?
I do. And there is actually a small wedding in it.
It's a really good wedding.
Thank
I really
you
liked
very
it.
Much. It's not a pivotal part of the plot, but there's a wedding. I do. It's called Pre-Loved, and it is out on the 27th of April, which is
It's so good. It's one of my favourite things I've read in absolutely ages. And like, I just think, what I loved about it so much was that it was like, I know it's become like quite pat to say like, it's about love, but the relationship is between two best friends or whatever. But what it's so good at is like, it's this love story about people and stuff and the people and the relationships that we have with our stuff and how those although those relationships are brief, that stuff lives on forever. And yes, there's like a sustainability element to that, but it's also about like how things become new with new people all the time, and also how, but then it's like how people can become new people with new with all the time, you know.
Caroline, you've summed it up far better than I have ever managed to describe my own book. Thank you. Yeah, that is kind of the idea. So it's the main story is cut through with all these little kind of vignettes that tell the story of various objects that have ended up in a charity shop and who goes on to buy them, and some of the things that you might walk past and think was just junk on a shelf actually can end up being incredibly important in somebody else's life.
Thank you so much for coming on again.
Thank you, and good luck with the wedding.
Thanks.
This has been Sentimental Garbage, and I've been Caroline O'Donoghue. The podcast was produced and edited by me, with mix and music by Harry Harris and artwork by Gavin Day. If you'd like to email me about the pod, you can do so on sentimentalpod@gmail.com or get in touch with me directly on Twitter or Instagram at Zaraline.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.